Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and you have tuned in to Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. Logan, how are you, man? You've been on the road a little bit.
I have, yes. Just got back. Ended up stopping to see some family late last night on my trip back. But, yeah, I went down to Jackson on Tuesday for the Governor's Cup and spent the night down there. Drove down to the coast to Biloxi on Wednesday for the Road Dogs Tour, the first stop of the Road Dogs Tour. Talked to Dan Mullen and Ben Howland, Vic Schaefer, John Cohen, and spent the night down there and drove part of the way back yesterday. Spent some time with some family and rolled back into Starkville about 1:30 this morning. So now, yeah, I've got a few hours of rest. We're recording this podcast and then got a baseball game tonight. Got two night games this week. The lovely SEC Network scheduled a 7 o'clock Saturday night game. So those are never fun to try to cover, and to wrap the series up with Auburn this weekend at noon on Sunday. So another long weekend ahead, but shouldn't have a whole lot going on the next 2 weeks. So looking forward to that and just relaxing a little bit.
Yeah, TV does what TV does, man. And, you know, they bring some late baseball to the table, but also now you got to give TV credit for these Thursday, Friday, Saturday series that we get every now and then. Hey, folks, before we move on, I want to remind you about a couple of other podcasts to search for the Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's coming to you every Wednesday and Friday. And also check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps. That's coming to you every Wednesday. And Logan and I are here with you Thursday or Friday, give or take, depending on what's going on. And there's a lot going on right now with the alumni meeting time of year. Logan mentioned the Road Dogs, and the Rebel road trip made its Tupelo stop. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. The Rebels, big sports night for Ole Miss on Thursday. Evan Engram was drafted in the first round, number 23 pick overall, going to the Giants. We'll talk about that in a moment. And the Rebels get a big win to start the Arkansas series, 9-1, getting 7 runs over the last 2 innings. Up in Fayetteville, and Ole Miss really needs to start putting some wins together to solidify itself for an NCAA tournament at large spot. We'll get to that as well. Logan, you mentioned the Road Dogs here. No Tupelo stop for them this year. How did they arrive at that? It would seem like they would want to make a Tupelo stop, but they don't always.
Yeah, it's kind of every other year as far as that. Just in my few years with the Journal now, they've made two stops in Tupelo over the last 4 years, and they've made another stop. I visited them in Philadelphia, Mississippi, and then also, you know, on Wednesday down in Biloxi. So it's kind of every other year. They try to hit different spots. It's not always the same places every year. This is the first year, though, that they've kind of scaled it back to not visiting other parts of the country. They usually make a stop out in Texas. They're not doing that this year. They went to Olive Branch, and maybe it was Olive Branch or South Haven. I always get those little towns. A suburb of Memphis, let's just put it that way. They hit that place up, and they hit Greenville up yesterday on Thursday, and then they've got one more stop in Birmingham coming up, and then they of course have the extravaganza down in Jackson later on this summer. So that's kind of it for the Road Dogs. It's kind of an abbreviated version of the Road Dogs tour. They usually make you know, 5 or 6 stops, and you know, going back to about four this year, 4 or 5, and 2 of them were a doubleheader. Like you said, on Thursday they hit Greenville and one of the suburbs of Memphis up. So kind of abbreviated version of it. Not all of those coaches that I mentioned earlier are speaking at every stop. They're hitting most of them. I think Dan Mullen makes all of them. But, you know, that's the reason why I tried to go down to Biloxi. I was already down in Jackson already, and it was an opportunity to catch all of those coaches and kind of get them on the first leg of the tour, because I've caught them on that last stop before on the Road Dogs tour, and they're just ready to be done with it, get back home and see their family. So the last thing they want to do is really have a long conversation with me. But, you know, I could really tell the difference the other night in Biloxi. They were glad to see me, you know, smile, shaking my hand, and, you know, really spent some time with me, a lot of them. Some of it, you know, just talking, and it's good to talk to coaches outside of the normal setting that you usually get to talk to them in. And, you know, they actually know that you're human, and you know that they're human. So it was a good interaction with those guys down there, and just to spend a few minutes with them and catch up and ask some of those questions that maybe you didn't get a chance to ask, and kind of empty the notebook out and, you know, take care of a lot of loose ends that maybe you haven't asked about in some time. Cause, you know, like for Vic Schaefer, I haven't talked to him since I left Dallas. So, you know, it was good to, you know, I probably learned more from Vic Schaefer than I did the other two coaches, because I've seen and talked to Dan Mullen, and I've talked to Ben Howland, and I've talked to John Cohen recently. So, you know, I really didn't get a whole lot from them as far as huge, you know, major breaking news, but talked to Vic Schaefer a good bit and tied up some loose ends with him, and that was good. But, you know, like I said, didn't learn a whole lot from this thing. It's really just not a whole lot of things to you know, going on with Mississippi State right now. I learned a lot from John Cohen, talking to him about the baseball stadium. He told me that, it's going to start as soon as the last out's made at Duty Noble Field this year, whether that be in the regular season. I know right now Mississippi State's into the hosting conversation. He said if State does indeed host a regional this year, that all construction plans will be put on hold. They'll just delay everything until the final out's made this season. So as soon as they're done with baseball, construction will commence on Duty Noble Field, that $55 million renovations they've got planned. It's gonna make next year's schedule pretty crazy. They're gonna play a lot of road games, a lot of non-conference road games, which is something they haven't done in quite some time. So it's gonna be interesting to see how they shape that schedule up. But you know, I learned a lot just talking to him. I actually asked him, did he miss baseball? You know, coaching baseball. And he said he admitted that he did. You know, he said that, you know, you can't do something for 25 years and not miss it. And he said he just misses the competitive part of it, just competing every day. He said, but he gets to compete with all of these teams now. And he said he's really become a fan of Mississippi State's tennis teams and just some of these other teams that he doesn't get to see or didn't get to see as a head baseball coach. He gets to oversee everything now, and he's kind of competing in a different way. You know, the SEC is obviously so competitive, and he's kind of embraced that, and he's loving this new role that he's in. He's always had an interest in being an athletic director, and he's kind of volunteered his time over the years trying to learn how to do that kind of stuff. And, you know, Greg Byrne and Scott Strickland were very instrumental in kind of mentoring him while they were athletic directors here at Mississippi State. And when he had the opportunity, he's taking it and running with it, and so far so good. You know, I think he's done a really good job. He's approaching the 6-month mark as Mississippi State's athletic director, and you know, just talking to some fans that, you know, I really haven't seen that much of a difference. Is, you know, he's kind of took the ball from Scott Strickland and continuing to run with it.
So what will the renovations to Duty Noble Field include? Are the apartments still part of the picture?
As far as I know, they're going to go move forward with all of that. They're going to, you know, once the lounge clears out after the season, you know, everybody will take their rigs home, and they're going to build permanent structures out in the outfield parish. And that's kind of been met with some mixed reviews. A lot of the old timers don't like the idea. They like, you know, it's tradition for them to bring their homemade rigs out there. But I think the concern, and has been for the last few years, it's just the safety aspect of it. I mean, obviously those are homemade rigs from people, you know, and they've been dragging them out there since the 80s. So, you know, some of those rigs are getting old and wobbly, and I think there's a safety concern out there for some of them. And, you know, they're going to build permanent structures. There's a few different variations that that the people that own those lots out there can choose from, and they can customize them from there. But they're going to have to, they're going to have, you know, three or four different versions of it, and then you can kind of customize it from there. But it's going to be a lot safer for those folks out there. And like I said, you know, it's going to take some getting used to, because that's such a tradition and so linked with Mississippi State baseball out there. And you know, I think once it's built, I think everybody will see the difference. And, you know, just looking at the renderings of it, I mean, it's going to be immaculate. I mean, it's going to look like a minor league baseball stadium, but I still think it's going to have enough uniqueness to really, you know, say Mississippi State baseball. And, you know, that stadium was so far ahead of its time when they first built it, and it's taken this long for everybody else in college baseball to kind of catch up with where they were at. And obviously over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, some teams have surpassed Mississippi State and built better stadiums. I know Ole Miss has an immaculate stadium up there in Oxford, and going to continue doing some more renovations to it. But, you know, what Mississippi State's doing here is, you know, kind of resetting the bar with college baseball. And I'm sure in years to come, people will pass that again, and Mississippi State will have to do more.
Yeah,
that's kind of the arms race. Yeah,
it is the arms race, and you're seeing that with the NFL stadiums right now. You know, who would have thought that you know, there would be stadiums that would surpass or equal Cowboys Stadium after it opened in Dallas? But it's been there a few years now, and we see the stadium in Atlanta getting ready to open. Looks like they're a little bit behind schedule, but yeah, it is an arms race. Hey, folks, shifting gears a little bit, NFL draft, Evan Engram, the Ole Miss tight end, going with the number 23 pick overall to the Giants. Logan, you know, we've talked about this before. They're just guys that you want to see be successful. And Evan Engram was always a guy who in interviews treated us with courtesy and respect always. And so if he was treating the media that way, you know he was treating his teammates and everyone else that way along the way. In fact, you know, we had Evan come through the interview room one day and a year or so ago, a couple of years ago. It was on a day that an arrest had been announced for or had been reported for another Ole Miss player, one of his teammates. And so as he was leaving, I just kind of jokingly said to him, "Now, Evan, don't get in trouble, because you get in trouble, it creates all this extra work for sports writers." But and he laughed, and that kind of became a running joke every time I saw him. But I knew Evan Engram wasn't going to be in the arrest report. You know, I wasn't going to find his name in the arrest book, and he's been that kind of guy and just, you know, a lot of fun to cover. Engram really improved his stock at the Senior Bowl in the Combine. He ran a 4.42 at the Combine in Indianapolis, fastest tight end there. And that's in line with his Ole Miss career. You look back, he came in as a three-star prospect in that heralded recruiting class of 2013. He wasn't among the most talked about signees in that class, but he got on everybody's radar really fast in the season opener at Vanderbilt in 2013. Early in the game in the first quarter, he ran a crossing pattern. He's in the middle of the field. He jumps up and reaches behind him to catch a pass that was a little off target from Bo Wallace. And just that quickly, you could see the athleticism in this player. And, of course, the work ethic would follow. And Evan Engram's draft story is kind of more evidence that the projections are not a science. He had visits with the Bears, Rams, Panthers. The Saints showed a lot of interest. As a Saints fan, I would love to have seen him there. But he goes to the Giants. More Ole Miss players have been drafted by the Giants than any other NFL club. And that goes back to the first Ole Miss player ever drafted. Jim Poole in 1937 was taken by the Giants. And, of course, with Engram now, there's the immediate connection with former Ole Miss quarterback Eli Manning. I don't know how much those guys have met or talked in recent years, but, you know, Engram is a weapon, you know, and people saw that especially the last couple of years. When he gets in that slot, he's a downfield threat. He's not a traditional tight end. You know, he might be more of a big receiver in the NFL. He was not a guy who had his hand on the ground at Ole Miss. He almost always was split out. I don't remember seeing Evan lined up at the end of the line. I'm sure it was there. But, you know, he's a guy that was always split out, getting in the seam, getting downfield, you know, leaping, being physical at the catch, doing all those things. So good luck to Evan Engram as he embarks on his NFL career. And he's not the only Ole Miss player expected to be drafted this weekend. Quarterback Chad Kelly, obviously, is a big story. Not able to throw for scouts as he was rehabbing his knee first, and then he had the issues with the wrist that required surgery as well. But Chad Kelly is expected to be drafted at some point, as are wide receivers Demarie Stringfellow and Quincy Adebojo, defensive tackle DJ Jones, and defensive end Fadal Brown. The Rebel road trip was in Tupelo earlier this week, and Hugh Freeze talked about these guys who have the opportunity to get drafted, not just Engram, but all of them. And he said he gives them all the same message, and that is pursue this as an opportunity. Don't get caught up in what round or what team. This is an opportunity to play at the highest level. Go out and earn it. And that's advice that really applies to everyone. A very different draft scene for Ole Miss than a year ago when they had the three first-round guys. And, you know, of course, that was the Laramie Tunsil affair, and that brought the NCAA investigation into more focus and all of that. But three guys drafted in the first round is still a very significant achievement. It was overshadowed on that night. But it was good to see Engram work his way into the first round this season. Again, just a guy that you cheer for and want to see do well. Shifting gears a little bit, baseball. Ole Miss got a big win last night in the first game of the series against Arkansas at Baum Stadium in Fayetteville, 9-1. That series continues today at noon in the first game of a doubleheader. Inclement weather expected in the Fayetteville area on Saturday, so they're going to go ahead and get that series done today. Ole Miss really needs to start putting some wins together to solidify itself for a shot at an NCAA tournament at large bid. This is Mike Bianco's 17th season. Only two times previously has he failed to reach the NCAA tournament with Ole Miss. So, you know, they're pretty much irregular, but they've got some ground to cover now. You figure, Logan, you got to go 15-15 in the SEC to feel good about your chances. Going into this weekend, there were 12 conference games left. Ole Miss at 9-9 really needs a minimum 6-6 finish in the four remaining series. Three of those are on the road: Arkansas, Florida, and Auburn. The Texas A&M series from May 12 to 14 is the final Ole Miss home series. So a good start for the Rebels last night. They need to go on and win this series now. That would be huge. That would be really big for them in the RPI area to pick up a series win at Arkansas. They only won two of the first five SEC series in the first half of the season, but they started off the second half last week with a series win against Missouri. It was good to see James MacArthur pitch well last night, Logan. He was dominant with just one hit and one run allowed in a career-long eight innings. MacArthur, a sophomore right-hander, hadn't really pitched that well in his last two outings. At LSU a couple of weeks ago, it was like death by paper cut. He kept giving up single runs each inning and falling behind. And then against Missouri last week, he gave up the home runs. He had allowed only one home run all year, but gave up two to Missouri, and the Rebels would go on to lose that opener 9-3. Before last night, the Rebels had been outscored 24-5 in their last two series opening games. They lost that first LSU game 15-2 after trailing 15-0. The only run MacArthur allowed last night was on a home run, but he got a lot of run support after that. It came late, but just two hits for the Hogs last night, one each allowed by MacArthur and Will Etheridge, who pitched the ninth. This was a 2-1 game in the seventh inning, and Ole Miss would go on to hit four home runs, two by Colby Bortles, who had a four RBI night. Tate Blackman had a home run, his sixth, and Tim Rowe had a home run. The Hernando native, who also played at Itawamba Community College, Rowe was one of these lineup adjustments that Mike Bianco made in the middle of the year when he put Tim Rowe and Nick Fortes in the lineup for their bats, and it was successful from the get-go, these guys hitting. I mean, hitting at about a 300 clip. Rowe was hitting around 295, but he had really fallen back and was just 2 for his last 21 before last night when he went 3 for 3 with a home run and 3 RBIs. So a good night for Tim Rowe. The Rebels had 11 hits in the game, one by Fortes, another by Cooper Johnson. Now, it's news when Cooper Johnson gets a hit. He was a big national recruit at catcher, known for his defense, but he wasn't hitting enough to stay in the lineup. But since coming back into the lineup, he's 5 for 21. He had a two-hit game with an RBI double against State on Tuesday in the Governor's Cup. 5 for 21 is only .238, but that's about 80 points above where Johnson was hitting, and that's good news for Ole Miss if he can continue to contribute a little bit offensively and kind of make some noise in the bottom of the order there. Ole Miss needs him in the lineup because he is just a game changer defensively at catcher. And Logan, you remember, you were not at the baseball series in Oxford with football and women's basketball and so many other things going on. I think it was the women on the road.
The Final Four. Yeah,
it was the Final Four.
Yeah, they were in the Final Four.
Yeah, that weekend. But Cooper Johnson had really let his offensive struggles begin to affect him defensively, and State scored the winning run in the first game of that series on a passed ball. And so, you know, Johnson really, when he's on top of his game, man, he really can change things. And he did that in the sixth inning of game two against Missouri, when he threw out a runner at second base and really just changed the feel of the inning. That was the Sunday game three. Sixth inning, and Ole Miss was ahead 9-4, but Missouri was getting a lot of momentum and suddenly had a chance to tack on a few more runs there in the sixth. There were two runners on and nobody out, and Johnson just gunned down a runner at second base. And then on the next pitch, Houston Roth, another of the freshman class, Houston Roth, the reliever, got Missouri's leadoff hitter, their top average hitter, to pop up on the infield. And all of a sudden, in two pitches, the feel of that inning just changed dramatically. And it started with Johnson gunning down a guy at second base who had gotten a really, really good jump. So he can be a game changer defensively at catcher.
Yeah, I saw that Tuesday night during the Governor's Cup. Brent Rooker, I think he'd led off the inning with a double. He was on second base, and Johnson threw behind him and actually picked him off second. The umpire just flat out missed the call. Ray Gregson had a rough night at second base during that ball game. He blew that call that actually went in favor of Mississippi State. Next guy up, you know, Ryan Gridley singles him home. That's another run for Mississippi State at that point. And you know, what ended up being a pretty tight ball game. Mississippi State won that game 4-2. But, you know, two calls went Ole Miss's way in that game, and both of them involved Ray Gregson. Well, one of them involved Ray Gregson, and one of them involved third base umpire Robert Holloway. So some not exactly the best umpiring display that I saw down in Pearl on Tuesday night. But, yeah, that was a ball game that Ole Miss had opportunities in. Mississippi State starter Denver McQuarrie, one of our local guys, Parrish from Houston, he struggled with his command early on, walked 5 batters. Mississippi State ended up walking 7 during the ball game. Ole Miss also had 7 hits, so that was a lot of runners on base and only had 2 runs to score to show for it. They left 13 on base during that ball game, so they had their chances and just couldn't come up with that clutch hit. You know, had plenty of runners in scoring position, just couldn't come up with it. Brent Rooker dealt a big blow with a 3-run home run in that ball game. Then Mississippi State tacks on that other run that I mentioned earlier. But, you know, Ole Miss really helped out Mississippi State a whole lot last night with their win over Arkansas. Arkansas is a team that swept Mississippi State to start the conference season up there in Fayetteville. And, you know, that's something Mississippi State's trying to been rebounding from ever since then. And, you know, they've only lost two conference games since then. Mississippi State's leading the West right now at 13-5. And, you know, that actually put them ahead of Arkansas by a little bit, you know, having Ole Miss win that get ball game last night. And Mississippi State can help it separate itself even more with their series this weekend against Auburn. Auburn's a team that's currently a half game ahead of Arkansas in the standings. They're in second place. They're at 12-6. But Mississippi State really needs to play well at home this weekend against Auburn. Obviously, huge storyline with Butch Thompson coming back to Starkville. He was spent 7 years as Mississippi State's pitching coach. He's a guy that's from Amory, played his college ball at ICC. So, a guy that has a lot of local ties and obviously very beloved for his time here at Mississippi State, but had a head coaching opportunity there at Auburn and is doing a heck of a job in his second season there. So, first time coming back to Starkville, you got those storylines. Mississippi State also has a former player on Auburn's team, and Dylan Ingram, you'll see him out there at first base. He redshirted at Mississippi State back in 2014. And then Greg Dry, one of the assistants on John Cohen's staff, is coming back. He's on Butch Thompson's staff now. So a lot of familiar guys, you know, rolling back through, but that's not the first time that's happened this year. I mean, there's been a lot of former coaches coming back by, you know, through this time. And we saw Nick Mangione from Kentucky a few weeks ago on Super Bulldog weekend. You saw Jake Wells last weekend. He's an assistant at Alabama. Earlier this season, saw Lane Burrows from Louisiana Tech roll through. So a lot of familiar names coming back to Mississippi State this season that coached under John Cohen. But this weekend, Mississippi State needs to really pick up some wins, at least win the series. I mean, I think that's the goal. And they've won five straight SEC series since that Arkansas debacle up there in Fayetteville. So, and it's kind of amazing what Andy Cannizzaro has been able to do with this team, because he just doesn't have a whole lot of pieces in play right now. I mean, it's kind of an all hands on deck mentality, and the team has kind of embraced that. I mean, you look at last Friday night against Alabama to clinch that series. They played a doubleheader that day to kind of avoid that rain that came through on Saturday, and ended up playing to 1:50 in the morning. And, you know, I got to the stadium at 3 Parish and walked out of there at 2:30, so nearly 12 straight hours at the ballpark. And I finally finished up work and got in the bed at 4:30 that Saturday morning. So a long day. It took me a few days to actually recover from that. But it was amazing. I mean, Mississippi State had an outfielder on the mound who threw three scoreless innings of relief to win that ball game. So it's kind of amazing what they've done. Mississippi State's Saturday starter this weekend against Auburn has started the past few Saturdays is Cole Gordon, who they expected to be their starting first baseman this year. So they've got so many different pieces and guys taking on new roles, and they're still finding ways to win. And it's not always the prettiest ways to win, but win is all that matters at this point. And it's kind of been amazing to see what they've done so far. Did get some more disappointing news for Mississippi State. Another injury to their pitching staff. Graham Ashcraft is going to miss the remainder of the season. He's going to have hip surgery. So another arm gone from Mississippi State. We'll have to see how they adjust from there. I don't know if Brent Blaylock, the outfielder I mentioned earlier, I don't know if he's going to get some more innings. It sounds like he probably is. And they're just going to kind of continue to try to patch things up and, fare as best they could. But so far, so good. That's actually been working.
Well, you know, when State moved that Alabama game to the Friday doubleheader, I was a little bit jealous of you, Logan, thinking, man, Logan's going to finish up baseball on a Friday and he's going to have the weekend. But the way that thing played out, I don't know. I think my traditional three-game series was probably a better deal. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We thank you for clicking in with us today. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you every Wednesday and Friday. And Prep Rally for all things high school sports with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. That comes to you every Wednesday, and Logan and I will be back with you next week, Thursday or Friday, give or take. Check us out for another edition of Double Coverage.